House of Prayer Ministries continue to bring the message of the unadulterated gospel all over the globe. From the United States to Russia, from Latin America to Europe, we are a church committed to the preservation of biblical principles.
To the House of Prayer in America, you prayed for us. You thank you so much for your prayer.
Anytime out of prayer, pray they are encouraged and blessed. You deposited in us a spirit of evangelism which grew like fire.
You will see us at hospitals, nursing homes, and homeless shelters, at food banks, orphanages, and prisons. We're actively ministering in our communities and everywhere we go. With affiliates across all continents.
This is Levi Newman, reporting live from Jerusalem.
It was just a blessing to be able to be somewhere else and just to be able to witness to people and pray in a different country.
When they first built the church in Mexico, they go out.
And not only Mexico, but Brazil.
There are men and women all throughout El Salvador that long for the missionaries, the brethren, to come back to see them again because they saw something different.
With affiliates across all continents, we faithfully encourage pastors, workers, and congregations in churches and synagogues in many countries.
Every time that he was preaching, he would call me. He said, "Hey, you and your church, I need y'all to pray for me." He didn't have nobody else to pray for him.
We are a church without prejudices. We are a church without boundaries. And we are a church of all nations. Welcome to God's Heritage. I am Natalie Diaz. Tonight, we have a special surprise to all of our faithful listeners and to those who may have tuned in for the first time. Some time ago, we gave a preview of what was on the horizon, a new God's Heritage broadcast in the making. For the next 2 weeks, we want you to get a real taste of what this new broadcast will be like. So without further ado, coming straight from our Prayer First studio, I introduce to you the witnesses.
Welcome to The Witnesses. This new program highlights men and women that have made a stand for God in this modern world. Today's broadcast features a man that has been an important part of my life since I was 2 years old. He was a highly decorated soldier in the Army who excelled at his job to the point that towards the end of his career, he was sought after by many agencies from Special Forces, FBI, and the Secret Service. But instead of chasing fortune and fame, he went into mentoring the next generation. He has been one of the most important constants in my life for the last 15 years and showed not only me, but a whole generation of boys and young men that to be a soldier, you don't have to serve in the armed forces like him. It means soldiering through the daily grind of responsibilities. A couple of young men sat down with him recently and interviewed him for this broadcast. Let's hear why he made the decision he did and what role his faith played in those decisions. Here are your hosts, Caleb Barnes and Carlos Ramos.
Hi, I'm Caleb Barnes, a co-host for this broadcast, The Witnesses. So come and join us today as we interview EJ. I'll be asking him questions as a kid that grew up in church, watching his life, why he forsook his career to come help us, this next hour on The Witnesses.
Before we get into the interview, some longtime listeners may remember Brother EJ from prior broadcast, but for those who are just joining us, let's listen to some clips on how God delivered Brother EJ in prior deployments.
We were our route predators and Dead Girl Road, And once again, somebody comes around the corner and takes another shot, hits the tee wall right next to me. Like, hits the tee wall, and I got concrete chips and everything just smacking me in the face. I had opened the door to get in, and then the round hit the vehicle that just happened to stop right next to me. And then at that point in time, I was like, I know, you know, this is it, you know, this is it.
Now let's hear as Caleb and Carlos sat down with EJ and let him share his story.
Well, I guess in order to understand why I guess God gave me this calling to work with the youth, I got to go back a couple of years. I had a mother and a father in my house, but my father chased the military career. For the most, he lived a married but single man's life.
Mm.
And I had two younger sisters, and just like me, I needed a father in my life, and they also needed a father in their life. And, you know, even though he was providing, and we had food and shelter and all that, and he still wasn't around.
Hmm.
And so as time went, I became my sister's father. And when they needed something, they came to me. And when it was whatever was happening in their life, the decisions were made by me.
Mm.
And marriage, you know, and I walked my sister down the aisle, not my father. When it came to, you know, being there for the children, it was me that was there.
We'll hear more about his father and how his father's actions helped him decide what to do when faced with similar decisions. But now let's hear some of his life from after high school as he begins to see how so many people need a father figure and how they were drawn into his life over and over again.
And then from there, I met a guy. And he worked at a juvenile delinquent center. And I was still young. I'm probably 18, 19. I think I was maybe 19, 20 years old. And I went to work there. And everybody else there, they're in their 30s and whatnot. And I'm the young one there. And for whatever reason, the kids took more to me than they took to the older guys. And it's because I could relate to them. So I worked at delinquent centers for a couple of years, and I realized a lot of these kids were looking for that same thing, a father figure, a parent, a man in their life. And I just remember, two kids in particular, and a young 13-year-old kid, single mom, she was a nurse. And for whatever reason, she had oxycodone with her. The kid took it to school. He got in trouble. He got put in the program. And in the program, the parents had to give their rights to the program while the kid is there. And the kid was, you know, he was just, one day he was just having a real bad day. And that was just something, I was like, he was banging his head on the wall and everything. And then I just grabbed him, and I just put my hands on his, you know, around his ears, you know, kind of just hold his head, you know. And I was like, you don't have to do this. I said, you're a good kid. I said, I love you. And for that 13-year-old kid, that's all it took. And he said, no man has ever said, I love you. And that's all I had to say to him, you know, to help him out. And that kid would do whatever I said, whenever I said it. And that's all he needed. And another kid, he's about 15, 16 years old. And I heard that he can cut hair. And so we had a bunch of new group of kids coming in. I heard he can cut hair. But I had plans. The weekend was coming up, and I was going to go somewhere. And I don't know, I went to Walmart, I bought a brand new pair of clippers, and I sold the night shift. I said, bring them over to my chew. I said, I'm gonna have the kid cut my hair. So then he brought him over, he didn't know what was going on, and you know, he thought he was gonna get in trouble, and I just started talking to him. I was like, you know, I heard you can cut hair. He's like, yes, sir. And so I was like, all right, I need you to do me a favor. I said, I need you to cut my hair. And he looked at me, he's like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. He said, I trust you. And he said, you trust me? I said, yeah. I said, yeah, cut my hair. So he cut my hair, and he did a good job. And then I was like, from this day forward, as long as you're in the camp, you're gonna cut everybody's hair. And when I meant everybody, the kids that were coming into the program, not every adult or anything. I said, well, you're gonna be my barber, and you're gonna cut everybody else's hair here. And that's all it took, is just for somebody to tell him that I trust you, because he didn't have a father figure either.
Psalm 127, verse 3 through 5 says, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. He realized at this young age that so many young men and boys need help to become a mature, confident man. He's still working with kids today in a different way, and we will hear from some of them later in the broadcast. But first, let's hear how circumstances began to change and put him on a collision course with the decision of a lifetime. Live for himself or for others. Let's hear as his story continues.
But, you know, from there, I joined the military, and I was single at the time, so I chased a career. And I wanted to be the best. You know, combat arms, reconnaissance scout. I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be a ranger, a sniper, special forces. I wanted to do everything.
Right.
And you know, as time went, and I was fast tracking, you know, I'm deploying, and I see my platoon is full of a bunch of 17, 18-year-old kids. And there was a conversation we had once that, where were you at 9/11?
Right.
And I'm like, 9/11? I was like, I was getting ready to go to Iraq. And then they were like, I was in the second grade. I was in this grade. And I'm like, oh, man. I said, I got a bunch of kids here. And so then I had to, like, man, I got somebody else's kids here. And I was like, kind of just reminded me of just the program. But, you know, these guys weren't in trouble. You know, I was like, man, I got to take care of these kids. And they're all a bunch of kids, you know?
His desire to help kids began to be tested as his Army career progressed, and he became, in his own words, a victim of his own success. During his last few deployments, the real possibility of his own death caused him to start thinking about his own soul. Let's hear how the danger caused him to think about eternity.
And I made a promise one time. I was like, God, I was like, you take care of me. I was about to leave again on another deployment. I was like, God, you take care of me, take care of my family. And I was like, it's like, I'll serve you. It says, no looking back, no questions asked. I said, I'll just do what I'm told. Mm. And I just came back from 2007, 2009 deployment, and I PCS, and now I'm leaving again, 2009 to 2010 deployment. And so a lot of different things happened, a lot of tests, a lot of explosions, a lot of just bad, you know, things that could really, you know, bring you down. But it wasn't until I remember I made a promise. And through all the explosions, through all the firefights, through all whatever happened, You know, even though at one point in time, I was like, God wasn't taking care of me. I was upset. I didn't realize that I didn't have one bullet hole in me. I didn't have any limb missing from any shrapnel, from any explosion. And God really was taking care of me.
Wow.
So I came back. I talked to my pastor. And I started going to Bible college. And at that point in time, I was like, all right, I'm going to get out of the military as soon as I can.
After realizing that God was not sparing him from the fire and trials, but was showing his power by repeatedly bringing him through them without a scratch, EJ began to grow in his faith and trust in God more. This was critical for what was coming next. God had proven that he could take care of him physically if he just trusted in God, but he would now be faced with opportunities that many people only dreamed of, opportunities that could lead him down the same path as his father, chasing a career at the expense of his family and the children he wanted to help. Proverbs 3, verse 5 through 6 says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths."
Then comes another deployment. And so now I'm going to this deployment. I got selected to protect the commanding general, General Abrams. And so now I'm in Afghanistan protecting General Abrams. And there's a saying in the military, you're a victim of your own success. And because of, you know, our ability, my platoon's ability to do our job, the way we trained, the training that they gave us, and we got tasked with protecting every VIP, every VVIP that came in the sector. So if the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff showed up, I had to take care of him. If some celebrity decided to come and do a USO tour or something, I had to protect them. So anybody that came into that sector, I was tasked with protecting them. And so right there, it opened up a lot of networking. And if I didn't make the decision to get out and serve God, it would have been real easy to just pick one of those jobs and just move on with life, you know? But, I mean, I got opportunities from the Pentagon, the White House, different celebrities, the NFL, protecting the NFL players. Just everybody was just offering me jobs left and right. And I turned every one of them down. And people were looking at me like, you know, you are a very dumb man. That's like anybody would love to take any of these jobs. So you just turned down, you know, protecting celebrities and protecting football players and protecting, you know, people in the White House, joining the Secret Service, all this stuff. You're like, you just turn all that down. It's like, what are you gonna do? It's like, when I get home, I'm gonna get out the military. I'm gonna continue to go to the Bible college. And I'm just gonna serve God. And they, Sergeant Ortiz, you are dumb. I was like, you're already getting looked at to be a first sergeant, and you're gonna turn that down? Yes, I'm gonna turn it down. So I'm gonna get out and I'm gonna serve God. And there was another very important reason, is I started seeing myself as my dad chasing a career. It's 15 years in now, and I'm already getting looked at to be a first sergeant at 15 years in the military. You know, so I'm very fast tracking my resume. I guess you can say resume, you know, military is NCOERs, but it's pretty stacked, you know? And not just doing just little random jobs. I got very, very high names and important people that are there in my NCOER or my resume, I guess. And it's not just somebody just saying it. You can pull it up and they're like, yeah, that's you. That's you in the newspaper. That is you. Yep, you're right there. That's 100% correct, you know? And I did not want to be my dad as far as chasing a military career. Because along the way, I got married. And now I have my own kids. And I have my son. And he's around 10, 11 years old. And he's looking for that man. Mm. But I'm defending the country. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Yes, I got people back here helping, you know, take care of him and watch over him for me, mentoring him and whatnot. But I remember what it was to be me at his age and have a father in my house, but not have a father in my house.
Yeah.
There was a sergeant major. He's like, Ortiz, when you get back from this deployment, he said, you tell the SR people the truth this time. Mm. I said, don't go in there and do the military. Just suck it up and drive on, drink water. I said, you tell them the truth. And I did. I went in there and did my evaluations. And next you know, they're like, hey, you're pretty messed up. We can medically discharge you right now, medically retire you. And I was like, really? I said, I never went to sick call. You know, we're the generation of suck it up and drive on. You know, we don't go to sick call. You know, we were raised, you know, sick calls for sissies. You don't do that. And they're like, no. I was like, what you got and everything, I was like, you can get out. And I was like, well, this is it. This is what I asked for. You know, that's what I prayed for. I was like, all right, well, where do I have to sign? And even then, after I'm still doing my paperwork, I'm still, you know, doing my evaluations to get out, I'm still getting invitations. I'm still getting requests to go work here and protect this person and join this special operations team. And I just still got to say no. It's like, it's not happening. You know, I'm getting out.
There comes a point we all have to make a decision about our future. God will only carry us so far before he puts us down and asks if we want to continue on this journey with him. If we do, we will have to put forth effort and follow by making decisions, and not always easy ones. But we have the assurance from past victories that he will be with us every step of the way. Mark chapter 8, verse 36 says, "What shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it."
Oh, by God's grace, I got out. And I'm home more. I have nothing to do because I'm retired now. And my son has friends. And those friends are coming around more. And those friends are eating my food more. And those friends are wanting to sleep over. And those friends are wanting to go bike riding. And those friends are wanting to do things. And I realized, I was like, man, did we become the cool guys in the house? It's like, because I remember when we were growing up, we went to a specific house because that was like the cool house to be at.
Hangout place.
Yeah, so. And I'm like, man, did we just become that? I became the cool kid and dad. I was like, oh, man. It's like, nah, I got some responsibility. I gotta make sure I don't do nothing dumb around them, you know?
As he realizes that his decisions will have an impact on others, he comes to the place where he's ready to really give his life to a cause that's greater than the defense of a general or a nation. It's easy to die for a cause, but it's harder to live day in and day out for something that may or may not respond how you think it should. Next week, we will hear how his life was changed by his decision to help young men, especially the lessons he learned and the lessons he tried to teach. What he teaches us today is that you don't have to be a hero to make a difference. You just have to care. Anyone can make a difference in someone else's life if you give them love. Love is the greatest force in all of the universe, and it doesn't require special training. We can all love someone, and we can all make a difference. If we want to, we can all be a witness. We are the Witnesses.